Hello and welcome to The Bookmonger. I'm John J. Miller of National Review. Thanks for listening. This show is a production of National Review and a recording from the studio at WRFH, the campus radio station of Hillsdale College. Our guest is John Hood, author of Forest Folk. John, welcome to The Bookmonger.
Thank you very much, John.
John, what's the setting and story of this new novel, Forest Folk?
This is the second in a series of historical fantasy novels I'm writing that depict the early history of America, has a lot of historical events and characters, a lot of focus on those people, but also elves, dwarves, monsters, and magic. Why not?
The first book is called Mountain Folk. This is Forest Folk. It's part of what we call the folklore cycle. Who are these folk?
The folk in this case have a capital F, and it refers to fairy beings. You know, it's a common phrase that people have used, the wee folk or the fairy folk or the fae folk, to describe little people. Almost every culture on Earth, there are some exceptions, but most have some kind of legends or folklore about little people, often somewhere between 2 and 3 feet high, and they often are pranksters that can be good or bad depending upon the situation. They often can be a source of valuable things or magical objects, but they can also be a threat depending upon the situation. So that's what I'm describing, is using European folklore, Native American folklore, African American folklore, to pull out these fairy beings, these folk, and using them as part of a story about early America. They might be involved in a battle in the Revolutionary War, or in the case of Forest Folk, the War of 1812, or they might be involved in some other kind of encounter with a historical person, be it Washington Irving or Sojourner Truth or Ichabod Crane, all of whom appear in Forest Folk.
And there's a giant snake on the cover.
Yes, this is a Cherokee creature. The Uktena, it's sort of a Cherokee river serpent, and the cover depicts the Uktena challenging a hero of the book, Junaluska, who was a real person, Cherokee farmer who went off to war, actually served with Andrew Jackson during the Creek War, the component of the War of 1812 that happened in the American Southeast, and was a war hero. He actually was critical to winning the Battle of Horseshoe Bend, which kind of made Andrew Jackson's reputation. But as we know much later, Jackson was involved in the Indian Removal Act of 1830 that ultimately led to the Trail of Tears. And Junaluska, there's a lot of legend about his feelings about Andrew Jackson, even going to the White House and trying to lobby his former commander and friend not to remove the Indians like himself from their native land. So that's a historical character. And he's fighting a monster, but the monster is not an image I made up. It's a monster from Cherokee folklore.
John, this sounds like a wild mashup of the fantasy literature of J.R.R. Tolkien and a David McCullough history on the United States.
That's not a bad way to describe it. It is a bit of a mashup. I have a lot of fun including historical characters that people may know, and also characters that people may think are made up, but who are actually real, like Ichabod Crane. He's a real person, and I describe the actual real person in the book. He's one of the main characters of the book. He inspired Washington Irving, who he briefly met during the War of 1812, who wrote The Legend of Sleepy Hollow. But the real Ichabod Crane has a story all his own, and that's part of the fun of this, is to integrate real history with real people, sometimes history like in the War of 1812 that lots of folks don't know a lot about, with authentic fantasy and folklore. In other words, stories and images and tales that people of the time actually told themselves, as opposed to just things that I'm making up off the top of my head.
Who's this book for?
This is a young adult crossover book. In other words, it's entirely suitable for teens and adult readers, and precocious preteens could certainly also enjoy it. I've had correspondence with families where young people have either read it or have listened to their parents read it to them a chapter a night, which is kind of thrilling for an author, as you might expect to hear about. There was even a school project one time where some kids had to make their versions of the scenes and explain them, so that was kind of fun. But most of my readers are adult readers who enjoy historical fiction and or fantasy fiction and are intrigued by the idea of combining the two.
John, I've known you for a long time, and I've always known you as a fan of fantasy and science fiction, classic works in those genres. But I also know you, and a lot of National Review readers will know you, as a North Carolina-based policy expert, a kind of wonky specialist in state legislatures and agencies and that sort of thing. How does a guy whose day job involves watching the goings-on in Raleigh wind up writing books like this?
Well, I've seen a lot of monsters, a lot of fiction covering politics. I promise there's no capital gains tax discussion in this book, but there are some serious ideas about freedom in the book and how different people throughout American history have defined freedom in different ways. A lot of the clash of the book involves, I mean, Sojourner Truth is a main character. She's obviously enslaved. She's yearning to be free. I actually depict her famous walk to freedom that happened in New York where she was enslaved and give some fantasy and folklore elements of that to illustrate the kinds of powerful images and ideas that motivated people. Got some ideas from Zora Neale Hurston's work looking at African-American folklore. So it's not as much of a leap as it may imagine. You're absolutely right. I've always been a huge fan of fantasy and speculative fiction, from Edgar Rice Burroughs and J.R.R. Tolkien to Robert Heinlein and Frank Herbert. And all of those influences are evident in the book. It doesn't take that long to figure out some of the allusions I'm making to famous fiction writers. But I think what people that have enjoyed the book have told me really struck them the most was how it felt like it could be real. It's a story about real events, but obviously it has fantasy and folklore elements, and what I'm trying to do is make it feel like it's, if you make the leap of faith that there really are monsters hiding in the deep, dark corners of America, and there are little people, or there are fairies who live in secluded little villages in America, if you take that leap, the rest of it feels like it could actually be true.
John, I wonder if your foray into this kind of fiction is the result of your own dissatisfaction with current young adult fiction right now?
It's a fair statement. Some of what I'm doing in this book, you would have read, not exactly the same way. You read this kind of adventure story if you were in previous generations, and I think that this is a timeless kind of adventure story that young people and not so young people would enjoy reading. But a lot of today's fiction, I mean, first of all, some of it, frankly, is just sort of smutty, unnecessarily gory, and attempts to shock rather than truly to entertain or provoke thought. And so what I'm trying to do here is use some, in some ways, sort of old-fashioned approach to fantasy and adventure tales, but to do so in a way that tells a fresh story. No one has read before about a hero of the War of 1812 fighting a giant leech in the middle of a river. That's not been done before. But a lot of the imagery, a lot of the approach, and trying to use, again, as I said, real, it's kind of a funny phrase, but real fantasy tradition. For example, the Nain Rouge from Detroit is a big part of my story. There's a monster, a famous monster that was sighted in 19th century in Ohio called the Mill Lake Monster, sighted in various forms as sort of a giant frog sort of thing. There's the Wendigo, which is a popular monster in Native American folklore across the various Algonquin peoples, a sort of a giant, ravenous, ice giant creature. So these are real things that I'm turning into adventure stories that I think will speak to some timeless principles of heroism and of freedom, and be an alternative. One of the most popular parts of, or the popular elements of what I've been talking about is something that the homeschool community has latched onto. They've really enjoyed purchasing these books and having young people read them because it's the kind of literature that they wish was presented more often in the mainstream, and you just don't get it. You get stuff that's inappropriate for young people or is kind of simplistic and silly. If you go back and look at the, and I know you know this, John, if you look at the adventure tales of you know, the Jules Vernes and the Burroughs and the H.G. Wells and some of the 20th century authors, it's not easy. It's not simple. It's not dumbed down. It's actually quite ambitious. The stories are sprawling. The language is not simplistic. And that's what I try to do, is give young readers, and again, not so young readers, that sort of feeling you might have gotten if you were reading this kind of literature when it first was invented in the late 19th and early 20th centuries.
Book one is Mountain Folk. This new book, book two, is Forest Folk of the Folklore Cycle. How long are you going to do this for?
Well, we'll see. The third book is called Water Folk, and it depicts the Texas independence movement and the Mexican-American War, as well as adventures on the high seas. And that, I'm hoping, will come out in late 2023, and there'll certainly be a subsequent book on that describes the Civil War, the run-up to, and the consequences of the Civil War. And beyond that, we'll just have to see, John. I'm enjoying it a lot, but of course I have to balance the personal enjoyment I get out of it from our people wanting to read more and more stories about this world that I'm creating. The fun thing about the fantasy characters is, because they spend a lot of their time in fairyland where time passes very slowly, you have the same fantasy characters that can go all the way through American history, because they're in a sense sort of like time travelers.
The author is John Hood. The book is Forest Folk. John, thanks for joining us.
You're most welcome.
Thanks to all you for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please take a minute to leave a review. Your reviews help new listeners discover us, and that helps us keep this show going. We'll be back next week with a new episode of The Bookmonger.